Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, March 4th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Speaker of Parliament declares Headlands and Urungwe West parliamentary constituencies vacant following the expulsion and recall of former ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration Didmus Mutasa and lawmaker Themba Muliswa.
President Robert Mugabe and the party's former chairman, now ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo, are dragged to court by former colleagues Rugare Gumbo and Didmus Mutasa.
And former Prime Minister and MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai says he's ready to pay back the Reserve Bank loan that helped him acquire a plush villa in Highlands.
Headlands and Urungwe West parliamentary constituencies were today declared vacant following a recall of former ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration Didmus Mutasa and former Mashonaland West Chairman Themba Muliswa, who were expelled from the party last month. Ivan Chifera has details from the capital.
Those are lawmakers laughing as Muliswa bolted out of the chamber as Speaker of Parliament Jacob Mudenda announced his expulsion from the House. Mutasa was not in the chamber. Mudenda said he received communication from the ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration stating that Mutasa and Muliswa were no longer representing ZANU-PF interests. He said the two seats fell vacant in terms of Section 129 of the Constitution, which states that a seat of an MP falls vacant if a member has ceased to belong to a party of which he or she was a member when elected to Parliament.
And the political party concerned by a written notice from the Speaker or President of the Senate, in the case maybe, has declared that the member has ceased to belong to it.
He said, though Mutasa had written to him that his expulsion was unwarranted and illegal, all that was required of him to declare the seats vacant was the notification from the political party concerned. Mudenda added that the president and the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission would be notified of the two vacancies. Muliswa said he had no comment for now, while Mutasa was unreachable. University of Zimbabwe Law Professor Love Momaduku said, the two have two options, to either accept the speaker's ruling or to challenge it. He said the two should be given an opportunity to challenge the ruling. In another ruling, Mudenda annulled the ban of cell phone use by journalists in the press gallery, saying Parliament standing rules and orders were silent on the use of electronic gadgets in the gallery. 2 weeks ago, Parliament security officials forced journalists to switch off their cell phones and banned their use in the Parliament, prompting Movement for Democratic Change lawmaker James Maridadi to raise a complaint, saying the move violated freedom of expression and access to information as enshrined in the Constitution. Mudenda ruled journalists be allowed to use electronic gadgets, including cell phones, in the press gallery, and that parliamentary rules be amended to reflect the technological advancement in the news gathering process.
And they also approved the journalists for going a step further, informing the committee that will be engaging with officials from Parliament on this and other related matters.
Media Institute of Southern Africa Zimbabwe National Executive Member and Parliamentary Reporter Columbus Mavunga said the Speaker's ruling was correct and that journalists should not have been banned from using the gadgets in the first place.
It's said that we are still archaic, that we have to first challenge our right to disseminate information, not to be curtailed by any state institution, especially where they're supposed to think is the pinnacle of democracy in the land. So while we are happy about it, I think we are equally cautious that our road to ensure that the information dissemination in Zimbabwe is not curtailed is still a dream.
Another journalist, Paidamoyo Muzulu, welcomed the ruling but said action must be taken against those who violated journalists' rights.
It shouldn't have happened in the first place because our media have always been free to use their gadgets in the press gallery, and so we think that should not have been trampled, and that now has made a ruling on it. We also expect that those who gave the illegal instruction, punishment should be taken upon them.
Zimbabwe Union of Journalists Secretary General Foster Dongosi said the ruling was a victory for press freedom and would remove the Stone Age mentality in state institutions where officials are refusing to accept the prevalence of new media. He said it was timely and expressed hope that officials, in his words, would move from analog to digital thinking. Meanwhile, about 100 of the more than 600 former Mpada Diamonds workers who claimed they were unfairly dismissed in August last year are camped at the company's headquarters in the capital, demanding their unpaid salaries and benefits. The former workers, who are under police guard, have vowed to stay put until they are addressed by management, which had previously promised to pay them by February 28 and failed. Company spokesman George Manyaya could not be reached for comment. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Meanwhile, President Robert Mugabe and former ZANU-PF chairman Simon Kayamoyo, now party spokesman, have been dragged to the courts by expelled party members, former Secretary for Administration Didmus Mutasa and former spokesman Rugare Gumbo. Mutasa and Gumbo are challenging the constitutionality of the December Congress that they say breached the ZANU-PF constitution. Mr. Mugabe and his lieutenants have been warning Mutasa against taking the party to court, saying party matters must not be challenged in court. But political analysts are saying after the expulsion of Mutasa from parliament today, the gloves are off. Gumbo tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that court papers have been filed.
Well, papers will be presented to by our lawyers to the High Court.
And who are the respondents?
Well, the party president and the national chairman.
What is it that you are seeking from the courts?
Well, this is now part judicial, it's in the courts, but what we have said before is the reversal of the decision of Congress because it was not held properly, the amendment to the constitution from a democratic constitution to an authoritarian constitution.
That was former ZANU-PF spokesman Rugare Gumbo speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
For many years, many had regarded ZANU-PF as an impenetrable party due to the loyalty many showed to President Robert Mugabe. However, following the pages leading up to the Congress and beyond, that code of silence seems to be slowly cracking. Former loyalists like Vice President Joyce Mujuru, former party spokesperson Rugare Gumbo and Secretary of Administration Didmus Mutasa, while insistent in the past about their unshaken love for the president, now paint him as a liar and also a power monger. For perspective, Studio 7's Ndimiyake Makalele spoke with Professor Shadrack Guto of the University of Pretoria in South Africa and Professor Stanford Mukasa of Indiana University of Pennsylvania, right here in the U.S.
The recent developments where he tried to remove some of the liberation veterans and so on is something which I believe is important in the development of democracy in Zimbabwe because it creates to the demise of ZANU-PF as we have known it, as a coherent group of people just loyal to one leader. And I think from there, Zimbabwe is moving towards a truly multi-party democratic system.
Professor Mukasa, do you agree? And also, what does it mean that hardcore loyalists of President Mugabe, like Mrs. Mujuru, Mr. Mutasa, Mr. Gumbo, are suddenly now calling him into question, and they want to protect, obviously, their own legacies?
I think I warned this about 10 years ago, that ZANU was, in fact, carrying the seeds of its own destruction. And those seeds of destruction are now germinating. There is a Shona saying, Rinema Nyanga Ariputilwe, truth will eventually come out. The social, political, and strategic relationship that existed within ZANU were relationships of convenience. Many stories were told about the ZANU histories, which were not supposed to be made public. But at the end of the day, Mugabe has traditionally and historically been a dictator. ZANU has always been a confrontationist party. While this was welcomed in confronting Ian Smith, it did not make sense to use those confrontationist tactics against other fellow Zimbabweans who happened to express a different point of view. And yes, the chickens are coming to roost. We are going to see a civil war now in ZANU as the different members of this loose coalition now start staking their claim to the loot.
Professor Guto, from your standpoint, what does this all mean in terms of how strong or weak ZANU-PF could emerge?
ZANU-PF from now on is going to be very weak. We did have, of course, individuals disagreeing with this style of leadership in the 1980s with Edgar Perry and so on moving out and really trying to challenge him. ZANU-PF should have used that opportunity really to solve them in a manner that could build the party, but that did not happen. At this particular point, I would say the cracking moment is when he started now trying to remove Joyce Bunjuru, Didmus Mutsasi, and so on, who are veterans. And I believe that from that moment onwards, ZANU-PF is not going to be able to survive for a long time.
Professor Mukasa, if the stakes are this high, why do you think President Mugabe would actually risk the implications and the repercussions by rattling the cage as he is?
He may or may not have been aware that what he was doing was going to come around to haunt him. But he has never cared. And his famous expression to anyone in the world or outside is, go to hell. Any expectations that people might have had that he might put his party together, forge a coalition that will bring about a better Zimbabwe, those were just delusional dreams.
That was journalism professor Stanford Mukasa of Indiana University of Pennsylvania here in the U.S. You also heard the views of Professor Shadrack Guto of the Institute of African Renaissance Studies at the University of Pretoria, South Africa. Both spoke with Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakalielie.
The leader of the opposition movement for democratic change, Morgan Tsvangirai, has vowed to continue pressing the ruling ZANU-PF government to institute democratic reforms ahead of the 2018 presidential election. Opposition political parties are bitter with the government's alleged procrastination in aligning the country's new constitution and laws and reforming electoral laws. Tsvangirai, who has been dragged into a controversial $1.35 billion Reserve Bank debt after a ZANU-PF member of parliament last week claimed that the acquisition of the former prime minister's plush villa, which is located in Harare's Leaf Island suburb, helped increase the debt of the government, is now trying to force ordinary Zimbabweans to pay, spoke with Blessing Zulu in an exclusive interview. He says he is ready to repay the loan.
Well, as I said when I issued my statement, I deny completely that I have ever borrowed from Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe. I don't know what they're talking about. And I even insisted that those who have borrowed from the RBZ must pay back. What I know is that I was advanced a loan by government to buy a place for the prime minister. And that's the $1 million which I was advanced. But out of that, I have also put my money into the deposit of the house. Which the house is now the issue that has become the center of the storm, which is totally unnecessary. And I'm sure that they will be able to object that contract.
Are you repaying the loan?
No, not yet, because, you see, the loan is dependent on refusal to buy. So we have not even discussed about the arrangements for payment.
Recently, Marion Tupi of the Washington-based think tank Cato Institute for Global Liberty and Prosperity said on you, the West bet on a wrong horse, and it's now time for Zimbabweans to look for an alternative opposition leader. Your reaction?
First of all, I'm afraid Mr. Tobi is expressing his own personal opinion. It is not substantiated by any fact on the ground. Just recently, the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, led by Dr. Rwanya, has published a sample which actually reflects the opposite. You see, people must distinguish between the leader and the struggle. We are talking here of a struggle which is fighting to institute democratic change against an entrenched dictatorship with a system that has unleashed state-sponsored violence, uneven electoral fields, has even abused all the state institutions. And to judge the struggle as dependent on an individual, I think it's way too far the mark.
The economy is headed south. No prospect of recovery. What is the way forward for Zimbabwe?
Well, as I said earlier, it's not the economy which is the problem. It is the politics which is the problem. Sort out the politics, and I'm sure the economic response will be as swift as they did during the GNU.
Of course, you are not participating in by-elections calling for electoral reforms. And it appears ZANU-PF is not in a hurry to introduce those electoral reforms. What is the way forward?
We are not going into elections. These are not contestations. Those contestations involve free and fair and level playing field. If we were to, look at the way Zambians even have conducted their elections, Botswana, South Africa, even Mozambique to some extent. But you can see that here in Zimbabwe, it's not about election. Look at what Mnangagwa was saying, that he was very proud about tactics of cohesion and intimidation, where he was talking about driving local traditional leaders, Anasabugo and Mazishe, to drive their people, almost frog march their people to an election. Is that an election? So what we need to do is, for us to have a credible, legitimate election, we need to remove those kind of impediments. And that's why reforms are necessary.
That was MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Coming up,
the Business Forum with Marvelous Mhlanga Nyawuye.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Chadian forces in the northeastern Nigerian town of Dikwa say they have recaptured the town from Boko Haram militants. The military reported that 34 soldiers were injured in the effort to liberate the town, which has been under the control of Boko Haram for weeks.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammed Javad Zarif are meeting for a second day in Switzerland to discuss the status of Tehran's nuclear program.
And North Korea has lifted some of the restrictions on foreign tourism that were put in place to guard against the spread of the deadly Ebola virus. The Chitungwiza municipality's financial woes are set to continue even if the local authority retrenches more workers, sources say. Suspended Chitungwiza Workers Committee Chairman Ephraim Katsina, who is representing retrenched workers, says retrenchments will not address financial problems currently affecting the local authority. Katsina says the municipality is yet to pay some of its workers it retrenched in 2012, while it has only managed to pay 8 of the over 100 workers it retrenched early this year. Last week, Mayor Philip Mtoti revealed the satellite town plans to lay off hundreds of workers as it can no longer sustain the huge salary bill. Studio 7 failed to reach Mayor Mtoti, but Katsina tells us the council is also failing to pay the workers who have not been retrenched.
On the 31st of December 2014, about 131 employees who were 68 and above were early retired by council. They were not given notice because the council wrote to them on the 29th of December, and on the 31st of December, they distributed those letters. But they later got those letters on the 9th of January 2015, and I'm representing them. They came to me so that I can represent them. So at the moment, only about 8 workers have received their arrears, but the rest have not received their arrears.
Are they going to challenge their retrenchment without notice?
No, we said we will not waste our time doing that because we know that this council is now dead and buried unless the government intervenes. But at the moment, we said we will not challenge the issue of notice. We just want them to pay us our dues in time.
When are they expected to get all their dues?
The arrears, we have got an agreement of 2 months starting from the 12th of February and ending on the 12th of April. That's where we expect them to pay all the arrears for those 131 employees.
Do you see the council meeting this agreement?
I don't see them getting through because the situation is very chaotic. There are some people who will not pay their pensions and their gratuity, who retired in 2012. Up to now, they haven't received anything from council. They formed their own group and they're coming to council office nearly every day. We have got a group of widows who are also coming every day at the HQ. We also have another group of former employees who were either fired or are on suspension. They are also coming in that group.
That was suspended Chitungwiza Workers Committee Chairman Ephraim Katsina in Chitungwiza with Studio 7.
Harvard University this weekend hosted the Africa Business Conference, which brought together business executives from the continent and beyond to discuss business opportunities and why it's important for the African diaspora community to invest back home. The Harvard Africa Business Conference was held under the theme, A More Inclusive Africa, The Pursuit of Progress for All. Director Simba Mungu of Harvest Fresh Africa attended the conference with many other Zimbabwean executives and students at some top American universities. Mungu was part of a panel discussion on agri-processing together with outgoing National Foods CEO Jeremy Brook. Marvelous Mtlanganyahuye caught up with Mungu to talk about the conference and the benefits of investing in Zimbabwe.
My presentation was focused on agro-processing in Africa. How do we as a continent add value to the primary products that are being grown on the continent? And how do we feed the continent with our processed goods, which are currently coming from China, from India, and from the United States? So that was the focus of what I was presenting on.
And Simba, the elephant in the room, although nobody asked, when you say Zimbabwe, automatically people think about the land reform program and indigenization and land grab. How do you separate the politics from the business that you're currently doing?
Absolutely. It's very difficult to separate the two, especially when the pervasive perception is that the two are interlinked. And for the most part, they truly are. Government policy, which is largely driven by politics, affects our business immensely. We have to operate under this environment. But we've been able to do so sustainably and profitably, in spite of the circumstances. One has many views as to whether land policy or land redistribution was right or wrong. We are in the mindset that it was largely positive, even though there was questions in terms of how it was done. So we support government policy. However, we do work on uncontested land, of which there's a lot of in the country. And that's worked very well for us.
And also, you just landed a big contract with KFC as Harvest Fresh. How were you able to do that when everybody is complaining about the really restrictive operating economic environment in Zimbabwe?
Yes, we are operating in Zimbabwe, but we perceive ourselves and are an international company. Opportunities come across the continent, and I think our exposure in our previous lives as investment bankers in New York allows us to have a different perspective on opportunities in Africa. So yes, we are Zimbabwean. We identify with being Zimbabwean, but we look at opportunity internationally. And we were able to get this contract because we were able to structure ourselves in an international sense.
What's your takeaway from the overall Africa conference? How effective is it in actually generating future business for Africa?
It's highly effective. I myself came to this conference 10, 15 years ago. and was inspired by a story of a Nigerian who had gone back from the United States to start the Palms Moor in Victoria Island. That was the seed that allowed me to go and do what I do. So if we're inspiring, if we're telling the African story to both U.S. investors, international investors, the future of Africa can only be positive due to that.
And also, you took a big risk and left New York and the stock exchange. You were working for one of the biggest companies, Goldman and Sachs, and went back to Zimbabwe, which was really, at that time, in a very not-so-stable condition economically. What made you make that move, take that risk?
Sure. Risk is relative. As far as I was concerned, when I looked at the opportunities back home, I looked at where I was in my career. You know, I said to myself, well, you know, I don't have a direct family. I was not engaged or married at the time. I said, well, you know, this is my only opportunity to go out there and to go and try something that I'm passionate about. And if it doesn't work out, I can always go back to New York or London and work in the bank. So if your worst case scenario is that you can go and work for a Goldman Sachs or another bank in London or New York, that's a very good worst case scenario. And, you know, fortunately and fortuitously, I went back, have built a business, and it's worked out extremely well, beyond my expectations. And so the future, you know, future of the continent as far as agribusiness is concerned can only be positive. And I'd encourage more people to take that perceived risk, which I don't perceive as so.
And going back to Zimbabwe, coming from the U.S., you know, you were at that time considered the diaspora.
Mm-hmm.
When did you actually go back to Zimbabwe, and what were you able to do? And when you look back in hindsight, are you glad you made that move at that particular time?
I went back in 2012, and, you know, in retrospect, it was probably the best time to go back, because the perception about going back to Zimbabwe is very different now than it was from that time. And, you know, in business, timing is everything. And it's not really how smart you are or how connected, but timing is truly everything.
That was Director Simba Mungu of Harvest Fresh Africa speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanga Nyawuye at Harvard University in Boston, right here in the United States.
The students and youth working on Reproductive Health Action Team, or SAYWAT, says it is worried by unintended pregnancies hindering the youth in progressing with their careers. SAYWAT says the problem is not confined to Zimbabwe only, but a global social and health challenge. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to SAYWAT Executive Director Jimmy Wilford, who explains the impact unwanted pregnancies have on young people.
We are faced with the child marriages, which are quite also common in some sectors, and we are also having also young people who are falling pregnant before they actually maybe decided to really settle down with their boyfriends. And this is affecting really the development of the young people in particular, especially when you're looking at a student.
How is this affecting young people when we look at the economic impact that it does to them?
One, you are looking at somebody who has given birth before maybe the body matures. Secondly, we are looking at somebody who has given birth and does not have any economic stamina to look after that particular child. And that students in general are even facing challenges on their own in terms of going to school, paying school fees, paying for accommodation, and also catering for transport. And you can imagine that particular student who has been having those challenges and having a child of her own, that also is bringing a challenge. Not only looking at a girl child, we are also looking at a male student.
SAYWAT Executive Director Jimmy Wilford speaking from Harare. Tune in tonight for Live Talk, The Connection, when our hosts will tackle the issue of unintended pregnancies and how it is affecting young people in Zimbabwe.
Now to recap today's top stories.
Speaker of Parliament declares Headlands and Urungwe West parliamentary constituencies vacant following the expulsion and recall of former ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration Didmus Mutasa and former Mashonaland and West Chairman Themba Muliswa.
President Robert Mugabe and the party's former chairman, now ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo, are dragged to court by former colleagues Rugare Gumbo and Didmus Mutasa.
And former Prime Minister and MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai says he is ready to pay back a $1.35 million Reserve Bank loan that helped him acquire a plush villa in Highlands.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.